where I live.
Intruder alert, intruder alert.
Welcome aboard, Captain. Fighter pilots needed in Sector Wars. Play Astro Blaster.
R2 trying to increase the power.
Friends and fellow arcade addicts, thank you for joining us on the Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast. As promised, to make up for the lateness of the last episode, here is a second one for the month of August. And this time, we are tackling a revolutionary game this go-around with Capcom's mega hit Street Fighter II. In particular, Street Fighter II The World Warrior and the Championship Edition.
Round one.
Before I continue, I want to let you know, a little later in the show, I will be joined by my very dear friend and fellow employee at the Arcadia Retrocade, Mr. Andy Pickle, who's going to be sharing his own memories of the game. This is going to be a different type of episode, as I will be focusing more on the background history and impact of Street Fighter II over scoring and how to perform the special techniques for the game. While for many players, Street Fighter II really was their first introduction to fighting games, it's of interest that on a couple of different sites, I found an almost universal acceptance that the arcade game that is widely considered to be the first in the fighting genre is Sega's 1976 Heavyweight Champ. Of course, they're talking about this being the first game to feature fist fighting in the gameplay, or boxing in this case. Now, the fighting genre shouldn't be confused with the beat-em-up genre, with titles like 1984's Kung Fu Master, 1986's Renegade, and Streets of Rage. The big difference being that with beat-em-up games, the player is faced with numerous enemies, and the player must usually move from one area to another, defeating all enemies they encounter, generally 2 to 3 at a time, before facing a boss character so that they can move on to the next stage. It was back in 1987 when Capcom released the first Street Fighter to the arcades, a game that introduced the characters of Ryu and Ken to a gaming public. While I've not played this original game myself, watching videos online, the gameplay looks very similar to Konami's 1985 hit, Yi-R Kung Fu. The game was particularly noted for having two different and distinct control setups. For the Japanese cocktail and the upright overseas editions, players had access to the joystick and six-button setup that would become very familiar to fans of Street Fighter II. But Capcom also released what they dubbed the Deluxe Cabinet that had two rubber pads. These were pressure-sensitive, and depending on how hard and quickly players were pressing on those pads, determined how fast and how powerful the attacks were in the game. I would imagine the Deluxe Cabinet was down for maintenance quite a bit. Depending on where you're looking up information online about how well Street Fighter did, it either did very well or didn't perform to expectations in the arcades. In that game, both Ryu and Ken entered the International Street Fighter Tournament to prove how strong they were, facing off against 10 game-controlled opponents. Of note, if a second player joined the game, they played as Ken, and could actually take over the game if they defeated the other player in a two-round match. The producer for Street Fighter II, Yoshiki Okamoto, has made quite a name for himself, first working on both 1982's Time Pilot and 1983's Gyrus for Konami. It's been said that while these games were of course a success, Okamoto had been instructed to create a racing game, and the higher-ups at Konami were very unhappy at his willfulness and candom. Yoshiki found himself at Capcom, where he directed the game development on such classic titles as 1942, Gunsmoke, Final Fight, and of course, Street Fighter II. On the reason for making a Street Fighter II, he said, quote, "The basic idea at Capcom was to revive Street Fighter, a good game concept, to make it a better playing arcade game," end quote. Overall, a team of 35 to 40 designers, programmers, and artists worked on Street Fighter II, The World Warrior, with legendary designer Noritaka Funamizu, man, I hope I'm saying those names right, who stumbled upon one of the iconic gameplay mechanics of the Street Fighter series, the combo system. Funamizu, in the March 2002 issue of Edge magazine, said it was discovered when, quote, "While I was making a bug check during the car bonus stage, I noticed something strange. Curious. I taped the sequence, and we saw that during the punch timing, it was possible to add a second hit, and so on. I thought this was something impossible to make useful inside a game, as the timing balance was so hard to catch. So we decided to leave the feature as a hidden one. The most interesting thing is that this became the base for future titles. Later, we were able to make the timing more comfortable and the combo into a real feature. In Street Fighter 2, we thought if you got the perfect timing, you could play several hits, up to 4, I think. Then, we managed to place 8. A bug? Maybe." End quote. So really, when we play modern fighting games today in the arcades or online, you can thank Funamizu for getting the ball rolling on those combos. You know, when your opponent is able to hit you 457 times in a row. Noritaka has a pretty amazing legacy in gaming too. Besides Street Fighter 2, he also had a hand in Gunsmoke, 1943 The Battle of Midway, UN Squadron, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, Super Street Fighter 2, and Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, as well as X-Men Children of the Atom, to name a few. Street Fighter 2, the World Warriors gameplay, definitely set up the basics for not just the Street Fighter series, but the fighting games that would follow, like Virtua Fighter and Mortal Kombat. Street Fighter 2 tasks 1 to 2 players with a one-player game pitting you against AI opponents and a two-player game pitting you against another player by way of an 8-way joystick that allows movement of your fighter back and forth across the screen, or crouching to avoid blows and jumping, as well as the option to block incoming attacks. In conjunction with the joystick, a player has the use of 6 attack buttons, 3 for punches and 3 for kicks, with different levels of strength and speed for the light, medium, and heavy attack buttons. With 1992's Street Fighter Championship Edition, they added the ability to throw your opponent, which is very useful if they're just sitting there blocking your attacks. You hit the heavy punch button and move the joystick in the opposite direction to give them a specialized and satisfying toss. The goal for both players, or the player against the game's AI, is to whittle down your opponent's life bar with your attacks to achieve a knockout.
You win!
Players attempt to do this before the timer for the match expires. When that occurs, whichever fighter has the most life at the end of the round is declared the victor. If the player wins 2 matches, with a maximum number of 3 rounds, against their opponent, they move on to the next fighter. It is possible for 2 fighters to land the finishing blow on each other at the same time, resulting in a double KO, thereby necessitating the need of another round, and, depending on the skill of the players, sometimes even more additional rounds to determine the winner, which, in the Championship Edition, can be extended a maximum of 4 times. Whereas, with the World Warrior, you were allowed 10 additional matches. If a definite winner hasn't been declared at the end of those additional matches, the AI opponent is chosen as the victor, and in the case of a 2-player match, both players lose the game. Harsh. In Street Fighter II, The World Warrior, players were allowed to choose from 8 different characters, each originating from various locations around the world, hence the title The World Warrior. You could pick Ryu, who is from Japan, Ken from the United States, the sumo wrestler E. Honda, also from Japan, Dalazim or Dalasim, a yogi who hails from India, Zangief is a wrestler from the USSR, who apparently enjoys wrestling with bears, Guile, who's a special forces officer, who is also from the USA, Chun-Li, a formidable martial artist hailing from China, and Blanca, who is a mutant feral child grown up in the jungles of Brazil. In The World Warrior, after a player has defeated the other 7 fighters, they find themselves having to face off against 4 bosses, the Grandmasters, challenging the likes of Vega, a Spanish fighter who dresses a little like a matador and brandishes a deadly claw and hides his face behind a mask, the brutish boxer Balrog from Vegas, Sagat, a giant of a man with one eye who hails from Thailand, a practitioner of the martial arts known as Muay Thai, who was actually featured in the 1987 Street Fighter game. And last, but certainly not least, we have M. Bison, who possesses almost supernatural abilities and appeared to be some kind of military general. While I highly doubt any of you arcade addicts out there don't already know this, I feel like I should share it anyway. In Japan, three of those bosses had different names. Balrog's original name was M. Bison, but was changed in the North American release as the name, and appearance, if we're being truthful, was too much like another famous boxer, Mike Tyson. The character we know as M. Bison, in America, was later revealed to be the leader of an evil army and criminal organization known as Shadaloo, and was meant to be called Vega. But the execs at Capcom felt Vega wasn't a powerful enough name for the main villain. And Vega's original name in the Japanese version was Balrog. And Sagat was always Sagat. Beginning with Street Fighter II Championship Edition, players were allowed to choose those former bosses as playable characters, as well as allowing for both players to choose the same character, a feature that wasn't allowed with the World Warrior. With the 1992 game, it meant that in a single-player game, they would have to face 13 opponents to win the game, the 12 I've already mentioned, plus a duplicate of themselves, or a clone. Now, when Street Fighter II was first released, it's very important to stress that the knowledge of the special moves or techniques that are commonly known today were secret. The only reason a player knew they existed was because the bezel around the monitor said, "Discover secret techniques by various combinations of joystick and buttons." It fostered both an interesting competitive spirit between players, as well as a good deal of good sportsmanship. I mean, if you were facing off against Ryu, and all of a sudden the character let out a shooting a Hadouken or Surge Fist across the screen that smacked you, it wasn't uncommon to find that another player might very well not tell you how they accomplished that trick. Why would they? If you had stepped up to challenge them, and they won, it meant they could keep playing the game after they beat you. Or, if they were the challenger, they could take your spot. An especially useful tactic if you had already cleared out some of the AI opponents, making it easier for them to beat the game. On the other hand, you would also encounter players that it kind of felt like a secret club, and they were more than glad to tell you how to do these special moves. It made you feel like you were in on something special. So when the various gaming magazines of the day, like GamePro or Electronic Gaming Monthly, started publishing these moves, what then seemed like daunting joystick and button combinations, you better believe they started selling like hotcakes. Because who didn't want to be able to master E. Honda's 100 Hand Slap? Or Blanka's Electric Thunder, Chun-Li's Lightning Kicks, or Guile's Sonic Booms, to name a few. There are also bonus stages in single-player mode with the World Warrior and the Championship Edition, timed events that appear when a player completes three matches. They are first faced with demolishing a car. The next bonus stage finds the player attempting to smash barrels that are being dropped off conveyor belts. And then, a pyramid of oil drums that are on fire that the player has to break apart before the timer reaches zero. Both the World Warrior and the Championship Edition were a success in the arcades. And that isn't really the right word. They were a phenomenon. They didn't just birth some of those other fighting franchises I mentioned, but helped to breathe fresh life into the arcade scene. The World Warrior sold over 60,000 arcade cabinets worldwide in 1991, which is amazing, of course. But then, in March of 1992, when Capcom released the Championship Edition, it sold over 140,000 arcade cabinets. And that was just the numbers out of Japan. It was revealed in the February 1992 issue of Gamest, which was a Japanese gaming magazine, that due to the inability to keep up with the demand for World Warrior, that Capcom was selling an arcade cabinet for 7 times the normal cost. In that same magazine, Street Fighter II swept the awards, with the game being voted the best game of 1991, as well as winning Best Action Game, Best Video Game Music, Best Direction, and it won the second place award for Best Graphics, coming in just behind Namco's legendary Star Blade. Speaking of the memorable music used in Street Fighter II, it was composed mainly by Yoko Shimomura, who is rather well known from her work on Capcom's Breath of Fire role-playing game. In fact, she didn't initially want to work on the music since it was for a fighting game. a genre that wasn't her favorite. Yoko ended up finding she enjoyed working on the game's music, once stating that she felt that the music for Street Fighter II was probably the more recognizable, and for good reason. Some of the more notable changes included with Street Fighter II Champion Edition were... Wait, friends, I apologize, but I have this nagging feeling that I've been saying Championship Edition in the podcast instead of Champion Edition. I guess we'll find out when I publish the podcast. If I did this, I apologize. Anyway, some of the changes in the Champion Edition include the background stages where you fight. They've been given a bit of a facelift to look better, so they pop out a little bit more. Many of the techniques and moves had been altered to increase balanced gameplay with the characters, so that for the most part, no one character was overpowered. I'm looking at you, E. Honda, with your 100-hand slap. Speaking of E. Honda, he and Zangief were allowed to move now while executing some of those special moves. And finally, Ken and Ryu had received some graphical improvements, so that they didn't look quite like color-swapped versions of each other.
Hello, Mr. Dillinger.
Computer, seriously, how many times do I have to tell you? My name's Vic Sage, it's not Mr. Dillinger.
I'm gonna have to put you on the game, Fred.
I assume Andy Pickle's here? Bring him on in.
We have transport.
Hey, Vic, thanks for having me back.
Welcome back to the Retroist Vault, Andy. As you know, on this show, we are talking about Street Fighter II. So, could you tell the listeners about where you first encountered the game? Do you know if it was the World Warrior or the Champion Edition?
It was the World Warrior. I grew up in a little town in Oklahoma, and we did not have an arcade. We had 7-Elevens, and we had a Chinese restaurant that was down from my junior high that had Street Fighter II, the World Warrior. And that is where I first encountered that game.
Did you find you were a fan right from the first time you played it? Did the game just command your attention?
I remember when we would go in there and eat, there was always like, you know, a group of dudes around it, and it was more like, what is this? Let's check it out. And yeah, I would say gravitated towards it, kind of like a magnet, kind of like this is crazy and awesome, and yeah.
Do you think you were attracted to Street Fighter II, Andy, because the gameplay was something you hadn't really seen before?
Totally. It was totally different. I mean, I'd seen stuff like Golden Axe and things like that that were sort of moderny looking, but for the most part, arcade games were, you know, simpler Pac-Man type stuff, at least in my brain. Yeah, this was a totally different looking animal.
Did you and your family become infatuated by the game, or did you find it was just you and your close friends?
Yeah, it was not. Yeah, just me and the guys.
So did you start making special trips to this Chinese restaurant so you could play Street Fighter II?
We would. The restaurant was about a block away from our junior high, and we had open campus, which I guess probably everyone did. But instead of eating, we would take our lunch money and go play Street Fighter. They had a Street Fighter game and a pinball game that never worked, and I couldn't tell you what the pinball game was, but we would play Street Fighter. And that's it. No food, nothing else. We would play Street Fighter.
Andy, earlier in the show, I stressed how we players didn't know any of the secret techniques when the World Warrior and Champion Edition first came out. I encountered both players who hoarded those secrets and those that, in a spirit of good sportsmanship, were ready to share that knowledge. Did you also experience that?
What was crazy is I remember there was always the one guy who was super good who, you know, you would put your quarter up on the bezel there. You know, I've got next. I've got the winner. And you would always fight the same guy, you know, and he would always play with, I remember he would always play with Guile or Chun-Li, arguably the two better characters, sorry. But anyhow, yeah, he would not share any of the information, none of that stuff. And then we saw an Electronic Gaming Monthly that had, I don't know if it was the full list or I don't remember that part of it, but it had a lot of the moves broken down and how to do it. And so, you know, that was our Bible, man. We would carry that with us and study and practice, and yeah, they were very heavily guarded secrets, those special moves. At least for, you know, a couple of few months, I would say. And then it became common knowledge. And then things like combos and that type of stuff was, you know, just because you know how to pull something off doesn't mean you're going to do well with it.
So who was your go-to character in Street Fighter II?
If she was available, Chun-Li. Even to this day, I'll still play as Chun-Li. I like Guile. I never really got the hang of, like, using Ryu or Ken. I like Dhalsim. Yeah, but definitely Chun-Li, then Guile.
In your circle of friends that played the game, were you pretty competitive amongst each other? Or was the prevalent thought, it's just a game?
I'd say it was probably a little bit of both. I mean, of course you always want to win and be better than the next guy or whatever, but... And we were all dorks. I mean, so it wasn't like, you know, oh, we're tough guys. It was just, you know, this is what we had. We didn't really have sports. Our little group of tough guys, we didn't really have sports or anything like that. So, like, if we were the best at Street Fighter, man, then you were top dog. You were that quarterback that, you know, everyone would like. But back then, no one really cared if you were great at Street Fighter 2 other than your little group of dorks.
When you became such a fan of the game, did you find yourself practicing a lot? Did you ever get good enough to become the new top dog?
Well, here's the deal. The game was only a quarter, but quarters were, you know, few and far between. I didn't have an extra $2 or $3 a day to go spend on that. So I don't remember who figured it out. It wasn't me. I was definitely not smart enough. But we had a quarter that had a hole drilled through it. And we would loop a string through it, drop that in, and it would trigger the mechanism, then you would pull it back out.
You were using slugs.
Yeah. Not super proud of it. Definitely not condoning it. That's how we practiced. And I carried that quarter on my keychain up until even maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And I don't know where it is. I took it off and set it somewhere, and it's gone like the wind. But... So yeah, we would practice literally every day, 5 days a week. We would go to that Chinese restaurant and we would play hours. I would say, you know, probably we would probably play at least 45 minutes or an hour each day. Sometimes on the weekend, but yeah, it got kind of to once we got figured out the moves and figured out combos and things like that, it became a semi-obsession for sure.
With all of that practice, did you end up dethroning the guy that had the top spot?
I got fairly good at the game, yeah. I mean, a few of us did, but I got pretty good with it. There was an arcade at the mall in Tulsa, which was maybe 45 minutes away from us, that we would go to occasionally. And I remember one Saturday or Sunday, you know, dominating that game for a good hour and a half, 2 hours, and just standing there. And from what I remember, and I could be wrong, but if you won, you know, you would just continue playing. So you could literally stand there for a couple of hours on one quarter. And, yeah, it was kind of fun, actually. You know, because like I said, being a guy who was not super sporty or anything like that, it was kind of cool to be that top dog. So, yeah, it was the only arcade game, even to this day, that I was actually remotely decent at.
So when you're working here at the Arcadia Retrocade, do you ever just find yourself strolling through the arcade machines until you're standing in front of the Street Fighter II?
I'm not going to lie. There was a day last week we were a little slow, and there was a little dude, maybe 9 or 10 in here, that was asking about some of the moves, and he didn't have to pull my leg. I kind of gave him a lesson on how to pull off a couple of things, and yeah, it's still one of my favorite games. Those Capcom fighting games back then were magic. I mean, Darkstalkers and the first few Street Fighter games, I kind of got out of it once they hit, like, you know, the crazy super-duper alpha fighting remix, you know. But, yeah, Capcom did it right. I think they still do it right fighting game-wise. But, yeah, I'm still drawn back to that original, well, the Champion Edition, but, yeah. I tell you, the amount of hours and money and things that weren't actually money that I spent at the arcade, or not even the arcade, at the Chinese restaurant. Absolutely nothing compared to when we got that Super Nintendo cartridge at my house. I was not a Sega guy at the time, so no offense to my Genesis lovers out there, but I was a huge Super Nintendo fan, and...
Sorry, Andy, I didn't mean to interrupt, but when they made that announcement that Street Fighter II The World Warrior was being released on the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, do you remember just how much of a world event it seemed like? It just felt like huge news. At the video store I worked at back in the day, we had to order multiple copies. I don't mean one or two, but 9 or 10 cartridges for each system to keep up with the rental demand. I can remember buying it for myself the first day it came out. I picked it up at our local KB toy store. There was a line of people outside the store. Did you encounter anything like that?
I remember when, my comparison is I remember when Super Mario Bros. 3 was coming out for the NES. It was huge. The advertising was huge. It was crazy. I mean, of course, the Wizard, you know, the longest commercial ever. Man, that Super Street Fighter 2 was hyped. And I don't know where I got the game. And see, the thing is, like, I never really owned a lot of video games back then. I had maybe, like, 10 for the NES and maybe 7 or 8 for the Super Nintendo. But one of those was Street Fighter 2. And I'm kind of honestly surprised that thing didn't melt. Like, I was obsessed. And I would have my friends come over, my neighbors. You know, my dad got into it. Yeah, that was the game. We would have competitions in the house. We would make, we'd draw out brackets and have our own tournaments. And yeah, it was crazy. There was a code that you could enter in at the title screen to where you could play, you know, you could both play the same character. You would have, you know, alternate colors for one, so you could tell each other apart. But man, that thing was crazy. It was a phenomenon for sure.
You mentioned brackets for competitions. At that same video store I just talked about, I can remember having a Street Fighter II competition on the Super Nintendo. There was probably about 50 kids there, and I took down their names, assigning them brackets. The prize was their choice of a game cartridge on the Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis. Now, in all honesty, I wasn't, or will never be, the greatest Street Fighter II player, not by a long shot. But between my friends, I could usually hold my own, and even manage to fend off other players at the arcade from time to time. At this video store, I really made myself available to my fellow gamers. What I mean is, if I had a day off, it wasn't uncommon for one of my fellow employees to call me at home, because a kid had come up and was asking for advice on what to do in a particular game, etc. I was glad to help. So, I have this memory of watching these kids, ranging from 7 years old to 13, just having a blast on this Saturday afternoon, playing Street Fighter II on a, well, at that time, giant rear projection TV out on the floor. I was having a blast being this kind of ringmaster for the event, and I made sure that any of the players who entered would at least get a free video rental. So they felt like they earned something. In all honesty, my manager there was a nice guy. But in no way did he get video games, or even like them. So, when I had the meeting with him about this competition, and told him that all the players who entered were guaranteed a free rental, he was cool with it. Because he didn't think anyone was going to show up. His eyes went wide when he saw those 50 kids, though. Anyway, so the competition's all done, and we have our victor. Kids are clapping, and parents are cheering. I shake the young boy's hand, and then say, "You have one more challenger to beat." All the clapping and cheering ceased. It was hilarious. It was like I made my shadow grow like Gandalf the Grey in The Lord of the Rings. And then you could hear all the other kids going, "Ooh." That's one of my fondest memories of working at that video store. Sorry, didn't mean to go off on a tangent like that, though. Andy, you said that you kind of stopped following the Street Fighter series after they started producing sequels. But did you pick it back up later or anything like that?
A little bit. There was a Super Street Fighter II on the SNES that I remember having. And it was, you know, it was good. I don't know, just some of that charm was still there, but it was like, I don't know, it was kind of over my head. And honestly, I hate to say it, I hate to admit it, but there was a time in the late 90s where I kind of got out of video gaming for a good two and a half years. And when I was out of it, you know, I had other interests. While I was out of it, that's when it, you know, it became super hyper turbo new characters, alpha fighting movie, and all that's awesome. But I don't know. There's still something about those original games. I do like Super Street Fighter 4, but that said, the originals are still, and I think always will be, the best. Capcom really hit the mark with those games. Great characters, great playability. Just, if you were good, you were good. And if you lost, man, you couldn't blame it on the game. You know, it was no fault of programming or anything like that. It was user error, and that's the mark of a good game, I think.
I think it's kind of funny, Andy, that you gave up on arcade games for a while, and now you help run the Arcadia Retrocade.
Vic, I really appreciate you letting me come in and relive a little bit of my youth and talk about, not my favorite, but one of my favorite arcade games, video games in general. Really, really appreciate it. But I've got to get up early tomorrow. I've got to get the arcade open up. We've got another busy day. So I think we need to part ways for now.
Okay, well, you know the way. Go over there and step on the teleport pad.
Hey, before I go, we got this weird black crate thing yesterday delivered to us, and I cracked it open because I'm like a kid on Christmas, and I know that Shay probably would not want me telling you this, but I recorded a little sample of what we may have going on.
Greetings, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Sword and Conan Armada. Get ready.
We have transport.
Computer, why do you keep doing that? I was about to ask Andy about we have a last Starfighter game now? Did Shay have someone build a mock game? But you teleported him out of here before I could ask. Why do you keep doing that?
End of line.
Well, I want to thank Andy Pickle for being kind enough to come back for that interview. As we just touched upon with the SNES and Genesis ports of Street Fighter II, with an arcade game that was such a success, it naturally would find itself ported to those home consoles and computers of the day, like the Atari ST, Commodore 64 and Amiga, as well as PC and the ZX Spectrum. It also found itself being ported to the Nintendo Game Boy, and was recently found on the Capcom Classics Collection, Volume 1, for the PlayStation and Xbox. Now yet again, with a property this huge, it couldn't be contained to just video games. And while we may not have received Street Fighter cereal, we did see the Street Fighters from the Champion Edition become members of the G.I. Joe and Cobra team, thanks to the Street Fighter toy line. In 1994, Street Fighter was made into a live-action movie, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme as Guile, the late great Raoul Julia as M. Bison, and singer, as well as actress, Kylie Minogue playing the role of Cammy, who was first introduced in 1993's Super Street Fighter II. That wasn't the only movie, as an animated feature film entitled Street Fighter II, The Animated Movie, was also released that year. And I think it's safe to say that it fared better than the live-action version. Beginning in 1995, there came Street Fighter, the animated series. It actually lasted for 2 seasons, for a total of 26 episodes, and found Guile in charge of an undercover peacekeeping team, which was borrowing elements of the live-action film, a team known only as Street Fighter.
And now, these messages.
It's the most lethal G.I. Joe team yet! Capcom Street Fighter 2!
No way!
Wait, there's Guile, Ryu, Zangief, Blanca, and Dalsine.
What's a Dalsim?
Oh, some with real ninja moves.
Hey! But Cobra's got Street Fighters too.
Vega, Sagat, Balrog.
And me, Air Bison.
They look unbeatable. God!
You know them, you love them.
So Corrupto!
Capcom Street Fighter 2 figures these sold separately.
Oh, I like them.
Colonel William Guile. One of the greatest martial artists in the world travels the global tournament circuit, using it to conceal his top-secret mission as leader of an elite group of international crime fighters known only by their codename, Street Fighter. The heroic man-beast, Blanca, hard-kicking fighting machine, Chun-Li. Most amazing warriors ever seen have joined forces with Guile to combat the criminal empire of Shadaloo and its superhuman leader, divisive. They have their own code of honor. Discipline, justice, commitment. And together they will triumph against the forces of evil. Street Fighter!
Stay calm. Concentrate on the screen. Street Fighter 2 is on Super Nintendo. From the arcades, the ultimate combat game. Each fighter has a different technique, an acrobatic move, a hidden punch. It's on the streets now, exclusively on Super Nintendo. Super Nintendo with Street Fighter 2. It's unbeatable.
Now for myself, the first time I encountered Street Fighter 2 was not at the local Showbiz Pizza of my youth. Now for myself, the first time I encountered Street Fighter 2 was not at the local Showbiz Pizza of my youth, as it had already been transformed into a Chuck E. Cheese at that point, and they had removed 99% of the video games to make room for ticket games or redemption games, as they're sometimes called. In the early 90s, for a brief time in my neck of the woods, an arcade opened up called Zap. And that is where I first saw the World Warrior and the Champion Edition, and later their sequels. Here at the Arcadia Retrocade, Street Fighter II, the Champion Edition, was one of the earlier games Shay purchased. And it's safe to say, it is most definitely still as popular today as it was when it was first released. Out on the floor, it shares a spot with Virtua Fighter on one side, and the WWF Superstars on the other. Near the snack bar, so that we can keep an eye on it, as well as the players. The arcade takes pride in being a family-friendly establishment, but sometimes when players get caught up in the competitive aspects of the game, we are forced to remind them that no potty language is allowed. And I think that about wraps up our podcast for this go-around. Friends, on some of these shows, it's sometimes really hard to find any information about a game. With Street Fighter II, the World Warrior, and the Champion Edition, there's too much information, so I believe we've gone a little long on this episode. And yet, I feel like we've only touched the tip of the iceberg with Street Fighter 2. So I hope you'll forgive me if I left any of your favorite aspects of the game out of the podcast. The Diary of an Arcade Employee podcast has a Facebook page. We hope you'll hop on over and give us a like. It's certainly a great spot to share your own arcade memories and enjoy the celebration of classic arcade and home video games. Our ending theme, which is entitled River Raid, was composed by Tony Longworth. You can listen to even more of his music on SoundCloud and on his official site, which you can reach at www.tonylongworth.com. If you have any feedback for the show, or perhaps a suggestion for a game to cover in the future, you can reach me at vicsage@retroist.com. The podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, I would really appreciate it if you could give us a rating. It certainly helps to get the word out to new listeners. For further information about the Arcadia Retrocade, please make sure to follow them over on their Facebook page. I will be sure to provide a link on the Retroist post for this episode. Of course, I want to give a huge thanks to the Retroist. When you need your daily retro fix, why not visit the Retroist at www.retroist.com. Have a token on me as we listen to a clip for the game I will discuss on the next show.
Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye, and we hope to see you next time.